Welcome to the Deep Dive. We take complex topics, sort of peel back the layers, and hopefully hand you the crucial insights. Today we're diving into disorders of the nail. We're drawing from an incredible resource, www.orthopedia.com. It's the world's best free and peer-reviewed textbook, edited by Bernstein, Penny, and Viet. But really important, before you take a test, and certainly before you take care of a patient, please don't just rely on us. Read the book. You know, it's funny, we often overlook our fingernails, don't we? They're just kind of there. But beneath that, well, that seemingly simple surface, there's a surprising world of complexity. What we're going to try and uncover today is just how crucial nails really are, not just for protection, but also as silent indicators of potentially significant health issues. And sometimes, unfortunately, they can be profound sources of patient discomfort. So this deep dive is really designed to equip you, our listener, with the essential knowledge, turning something you might take for granted into, well, a powerful diagnostic tool.
We'll explore their functions, the anatomy, common injuries, infections, and the critical pathologies you need to be aware of. Okay, so let's start right at the beginning. Before we get into what can go wrong, what exactly are the key functions of the fingernail? I mean, beyond looking nice, what are they actually doing?
That is a great question. And yeah, their utility is often underestimated. Functionally, the nail plate, it's much more than just a passive shield. Its primary role, yes, is protecting that very sensitive fingertip, but it also enhances our tactile sensation.
Oh, how does it do that?
Well, it provides a rigid counterforce that allows the mechanoreceptors in our finger pulp to register much finer textures. Pretty neat, huh? It even plays a small role in thermoregulation. And I mean, anyone who's tried picking up a coin without a fingernail, you quickly realize how essential it is for those fine motor tasks. And something else that's fascinating, often overlooked, is the dense lymphatic network in the hypanichium.
The hypanichium. Remind us where that is exactly.
Sure. That's the protective seal of skin just under the free edge of the nail plate. And this lymphatic richness, it really helps fortify our resistance to infection.
That's a great point, that interconnectedness. Now, speaking of intricate, the anatomy itself is quite detailed for such a small area. Can you walk us through the core components?
Absolutely. So when we talk about the nail, most people just picture the nail plate, right? That hard, translucent sheet of keratin. It's basically layers of dead, compacted cells. But underneath that lies the nail bed. And that's a highly vascular and neural tissue. It's so rich with capillaries, in fact.
Capillary refill.
Exactly. That's where we assess it. It's a quick, vital tool for checking peripheral blood flow. And then tucked away proximally under the epinicium is the germinal matrix.
Okay.
That's the real engine room. It's the source of all the new cells that make up the nail plate, constantly pushing older cells forward. It's why our nails grow.
So the matrix is where the growth happens.
Got it.
Got it. And what about the surrounding structures, the ones that frame the nail and often get involved when things go wrong?
Yeah, they're absolutely critical. You have the epinicium, that's the fold of skin at the base covering the proximal nail plate. Then the perinicium refers to the skin folds on the sides, the medial and lateral borders.
Like protective borders?
Precisely. They form crucial seals, preventing irritants and pathogens from getting underneath. And finally, the cuticle. That thin layer of dead skin cells extending from the epinicium onto the nail surface, another layer of defense. Understanding these boundaries is really key.
Okay, that makes sense. So with that anatomical foundation, let's switch to injuries. Mm-hmm. These are pretty common, right? Subungual hematomas, for instance. Ouch. Very painful. For, say, a senior med student seeing this, what's the best approach? When do you just drain it and when does it need more?
Right. Subungual hematomas are basically blood trapped under pressure between the nail plate and the nail bed, usually from a crush injury. The immediate insight, the key thing, is relieving that pressure. That's crucial for pain management. Mm. So often the first step is just placing a hole in the nail plate for drainage, trephination, we call it.
Okay.
However, and this is the critical decision point you need to remember, if that hematoma involves more than 50% of the nail.
More than half the nail.
Yes. In those cases, the standard approach is generally to remove the nail plate.
Why remove it?
Because it allows for a thorough inspection and, more importantly, meticulous repair of the underlying nail bed. We use fine, absorbable sutures. This isn't just about pain. It's really about preventing long-term nail deformity that can happen if the nail bed heals improperly or with scarring.
That 50% rule is a great clinical pearl.
Mm.
Good takeaway. Now, nail bed lacerations. They sound simple, but you mentioned deformities. They can have lasting issues if not managed carefully. What should we look for?
You're right. They might seem simple, but the outcome really hinges on precise management. These lacerations often result from crush injuries, which frequently produce a stellate pattern, like a star shape. The essential insight here is that any irregularity left in the nail bed during healing is likely to result in a permanently non-smooth nail. It'll grow out bumpy or ridged.
Okay, so repair is key.
Meticulous repair is non-negotiable. And another crucial step, given that crush mechanism, is to always get x-rays.
To check for fractures.
Exactly. Exclude an underlying fracture of the distal phalanx. And a practical tip, especially for kids, cyanoacrylate adhesive, you know, Dermabond, can be fantastic. It often gives comparable cosmetic results to sutures, but avoids the whole ordeal of stitching a squirming, possibly hurting child. It's relatively pain-free.
That's a brilliant tip for the pediatric setting. Okay, shifting from trauma to infections, what are the usual suspects for acute nail infections, and how do they differ from chronic ones?
So acute infections, like paronychia, that inflammation around the nail fold, typically stem from minor events. A small cut, an overzealous manicure, maybe a hangnail. The usual bacterial culprits are staph and strep, staphylococcus and streptococcus.
Okay, common skin bacteria.
Right. Chronic infections, though, usually tell a different story. They're often fungal. Candida is a common one, especially if someone's had lots of antibiotics or their hands are always wet.
Yeah.
Less frequently, you might run into atypical organisms like Mycobacterium. So the history, how long it's been going on, is really key for your differential.
Right. Duration matters. Speaking of infections, herpetic whitlow. That sounds like something that could easily be mistaken for a bacterial thing, but the management is totally different, isn't it?
Absolutely critical difference. Herpetic whitlow is viral, caused by herpes simplex, usually involving the paronychium. Historically, we saw it more in dentists or medical folks, but now it's common in thumb-sucking kids or adults after contact with infected genitals.
Okay, so how do you spot it? How do you differentiate?
The key insight is that it often initially mimics an acute bacterial infection. It looks red, swollen, painful. But diagnostic fingerprint, the thing to look for, is the eventual development of clear, fluid-filled vesicles, little blisters.
The vesicles. That's the clue.
That's your major clue. And here's the absolute clinical imperative. It's self-limiting. It goes away on its own. Do not incise and drain it like you might a bacterial abscess.
Why not?
Because doing so doesn't help the viral process and actually risks introducing a secondary bacterial infection. It can prolong the whole thing and just make it worse. Avoid IND.
Wow. Okay. That's a crucial distinction. Misdiagnosis there could really lead you down the wrong path. Just a quick reminder for everyone listening, all these great insights we're discussing, they're distilled from that excellent, free, peer-reviewed textbook, Orthopedia. You can find it online at www.orthopedia.com. We really recommend you read the chapter yourself for the full picture. Okay, so let's pivot back to those chronic issues you mentioned. Fungal infections of the nail. They sound notoriously difficult to treat. Why are they such a persistent problem?
Oh, they are indeed a tough nut to crack. Onychomycosis, the fungal infection, more common in toenails, but definitely affects fingernails too. Key risk factors that make people more prone include things like diabetes, peripheral vascular issues, and being immunocompromised.
Makes sense. And what problems do they cause for the patient?
Primarily three things, usually in this order. Cosmetic deformity, which can be quite distressing, then pain. And especially in those at-risk groups, the potential, though less common, for systemic spread.
And the treatment challenges.
They're multifaceted. Oral medications like terbinafine can work, but they don't always clear it completely, and they carry risks. A significant side effects, especially liver damage, so you need monitoring.
Right.
Topical antifungal lacquers are another option, but gosh, they require diligent long-term application, sometimes up to a year. Plus regular debridement. Patient compliance is often the major hurdle there.
I can imagine. A year of daily application.
Exactly. And in really tough, resistant cases, sometimes surgical ablation, basically removing the nail, is considered. But that has its own set of challenges, too.
So, yeah, not straightforward. Requires real patient commitment and managing risks. Okay, let's talk tumors. Maybe rare, but definitely need to be on the radar for unexplained pain or nail changes. What are the most common benign tumors we should know about?
Right. When someone presents with persistent nail changes or pain, you always have to consider a tumor in the differential. The most common benign ones we see in the nail complex, things like mucus cysts, pyogenic granulomas, verruca vulgaris, common warts, glomus tumors, and benign melanichia.
Okay, let's break those down. Mucus cysts.
Yeah, these are essentially ganglion cysts, just in this specific spot. They're the most common tumor affecting the nail bed. What's critical to understand is their origin. They almost always stem from an underlying arthritic spur, an osteophyte, from the DIP joint, the joint closest to the fingertip.
So it's coming from the joint itself.
Exactly. And they can deform the nail plate, often by pushing up on the epineichial fold. Treatment involves removing the cystock and the underlying spur. And a key clinical point, because these cysts often connect to the joint, if they rupture through the skin, bacteria can get right into the joint space. That's a septic arthritis risk.
Good to know. Okay, pyogenic granuloma. Sounds infectious.
Yeah, the name's a bit of a misnomer. It presents as a raised, often reddish, quite friable lesion. It's basically a proliferation of granulation tissue. It gets traumatized easily, bleeds a lot, and often pops up in wounds that haven't healed right. It's not really pyogenic, meaning pus forming, nor is it technically a granuloma. Eruptive hemangioma is sometimes suggested as a better name.
Interesting. Do they need treatment?
The good news is most resolve on their own. But if they persist and cause problems, surgical excision or thermal ablation like cautery can take care of them.
Got it. And verruca vulgaris, common warts.
Yeah, the common wart. You'll often see them around the perineum, the nail folds. Lots of treatments exist, freezing, acids, etc. But honestly, no single one is clearly superior. For you as a clinician, a key takeaway is that warts involving the epineochial fold, or very aggressive treatments there, can sometimes lead to permanent scarring and nail deformity. So caution is needed.
Right. Protect that matrix area. Okay. Lastly, glomus tumors. These sound intriguing.
They are fascinating. They come from the smooth muscle cells of the glomus body. These are tiny specialized structures in the fingertip that help regulate blood flow and temperature. About half of all glomus tumors occur subungually under the nail, and they have this classic diagnostic triad.
A triad, okay, what is it?
Severe, often excruciating pain. Exquisite point tenderness, the patient can usually point to the exact tiny spot that hurts. And, very specifically, focal cold sensitivity. Cold makes the pain drastically worse in that one spot.
Wow, that's distinctive.
Extremely. That triad should immediately make you think glomus tumor. Diagnosis is often confirmed with an MRI with gadolinium contrast. Treatment is surgical excision, which usually brings immediate and complete relief.
That cold sensitivity is a great clinical clue.
Yeah.
Okay, this naturally leads to the less common but critical area, malignant tumors. These are the ones we really can't miss. What are the main concerns?
Absolutely. The primary malignant concerns around the nail are squamous cell carcinoma, SCC, and malignant melanoma. If you suspect either, getting radiographs of the finger is essential. You're looking for any bony changes in the distal phalanx.
Okay. Tell us about SCC first.
Squamous cell carcinoma makes up about 20% of all skin cancers, but it's actually less common under the nail than melanoma is. It might present with subtle skin changes early on or as more advanced, maybe ulcerative lesions. The critical insight for subungual SCC is the treatment. It typically requires amputation.
Amputation.
Often at the DIP joint of the finger or the IP joint of the thumb. Yeah. It sounds aggressive, but it's necessary because of the tumor's potential for local invasion and recurrence if not completely removed.
Understood. And malignant melanoma, we hear a lot about its danger.
Yes, melanoma is particularly aggressive. It only accounts for maybe 4% of skin cancers, but tragically, it's responsible for about 80% of skin cancer deaths. Around 2% of all melanomas happen in the hand, and about half of those are subungual, under the nail.
How might it present?
Often as a pigmented lesion, like a dark streak, but not always. A full thickness biopsy is always necessary for diagnosis. Prognosis really depends heavily on the depth of invasion, how deep the melanoma goes, and whether it has spread to the sentinel lymph nodes.
Sentinel nodes?
Right. For lesions thicker than 1 millimeter, or those involving the full depth of the nail bed, a sentinel lymph node biopsy is usually indicated to check for metastasis. Surgical treatment for melanoma in the finger, again, often involves amputation, typically proximal to the adjacent joint, to get wide, clear margins.
So even more aggressive than for SCC sometimes?
Often, yes. It reflects melanoma's high metastatic potential. Trying Mohs surgery in this area is very challenging, and reconstruction can sometimes lead to worse functional outcomes than a well-planned amputation. Early, decisive treatment is key.
That really hits home the seriousness and the need for vigilance with any suspicious nail changes. Okay, finally, moving beyond direct nail problems. The nail can also act as a kind of window, right? Giving clues about systemic health.
Absolutely. It's a fascinating area. A classic example is clubbing.
Clubbing. What does that look like?
It presents as an increased curvature of the nail and the nail fold, usually curving downwards from base to tip. The fingertip itself often looks bulbous, kind of swollen, and the nail plate might get a shiny appearance.
And what does it signify?
The real insight here is that clubbing is very often a sign of a serious underlying systemic disease. We commonly link it to cardiac issues, pulmonary problems like lung cancer or COPD, and some gastrointestinal conditions. Though sometimes it can occur idiopathically without any clear underlying cause.
It's a major red flag.
It should definitely prompt a workup. And what's still kind of amazing is that the exact mechanism why these systemic conditions cause clubbing isn't completely understood. It's an area of ongoing research.
Still mysteries to solve, even in something like fingernails. Okay, so what does this all mean? We've covered a huge amount today, from basic structure to really serious diseases. To help solidify things, maybe give you some key clinical takeaways, we've picked out 5 key terms. These aren't just definitions. They represent important concepts for understanding the nail.
Sounds good. Let's start with the nail bed. We mentioned it earlier. It's not just tissue under the nail plate. It's that vital vascular and neural foundation. Understanding its structure is critical for thinking about healing, sensation, and of course, that's where you check capillary refill for blood flow. Its health dictates the health of the nail growing over it.
Right, the foundation. Okay, what's next?
Next, the perineum and epineum. Those borders around the nail. They're much more than just skin. They are crucial protective barriers. Recognizing their role helps you understand why problems like herpetic whitlow or warts in these areas have specific features, or why damage here, like scarring near the epineum, can cause permanent nail problems.
So their integrity is key. Got it. Number 3.
Subungual hematoma. That common painful bruise under the nail. Its significance lies in that clear management difference we talk about. That 50% rule, whether it covers more or less than half the nail, dictates whether you just drain it or if you need to think about nail removal and careful bed repair. It's about pain and preventing long-term deformity.
A very practical distinction. Okay, 4.
Mucus cyst. This is such a great example of how a nail problem like a groove or deformity actually starts somewhere else. It originates from that underlying arthritic spur in the DIP joint. It perfectly highlights the interconnectedness of structures and why you need to look beyond just the nail itself sometimes.
Thinking anatomically.
Mm.
Good one. And the last key term.
And finally, malignant melanoma. Yes, it's relatively rare under the nail, but its inclusion is absolutely critical because of its incredibly high mortality rate and aggressive nature. This makes it a true must-know for any clinician looking at nail changes. Early identification, proper biopsy, it's the one you absolutely cannot afford to miss. Vigilance is paramount.
Excellent summary of some high-yield points.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe for one final, slightly surprising thought. You know the term hangnail?
Mm-hmm.
It's often misunderstood. People think the hang means the nail is hanging off, but its root is actually ang.
Yeah, meaning pain, like an anguish or angina. It's a small linguistic detail, perhaps, but I think it speaks to a larger truth we've touched on today. The fingernail, so often dismissed as insignificant, can be a source of real patient unhappiness, significant pain, and, as we've discussed, a crucial window into their overall health. Taking the nails seriously really does matter. We have just discussed a chapter from the world's best free and peer-reviewed textbook of musculoskeletal medicine, Orthopedia. That's Orthopedia by Bernstein, Pinion Vayet. It is available completely free at www.orthopedia.com. And one last time, before you take a test, and definitely before you take care of a patient, please don't just rely on our conversation. Read the book. You will be glad you did. Thank you for diving deep with us today.